I still think it's a big mistake and a great miss for the West not to establish itself as a solution for the vaccine. And now, China and Russia are winning.
China pushes vaccine into the Balkans. It's Tuesday, March 2nd. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Follow us online for all the latest Myanmar coverage on VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, Aussie dingo damage, COVID relief slowly advancing, celebrating the Peace Corps, unknown computer concerns, hairless beauty. It's all on today's VOA Asia. As some countries struggle to get enough COVID vaccine, China has intensified efforts to distribute its vaccine in the Balkans. Some experts say it is an effort to increase the country's influence in the region. Dino Jahic and Amer Jahic have the story, narrated by Anna Rice.
Hungary was the first EU member to receive Chinese-produced Sinopharm vaccines. China is promising to donate 30,000 doses to Montenegro, and Serbia has already received 1.5 million doses. Humanitarian issues aside, regional watchers say China's efforts in the Balkans are a form of vaccine diplomacy.
I think it will hurt in the long run that Europe mostly didn't show itself as a player that can help the region. We're all seeing how Serbia turned to Russia and China and bought all those vaccines. It showed that Serbia, which has now been saying for years that it should be balanced and not dedicated only to the West and Europe, has played it smart. I still think it's a big mistake and a great miss for the West not to establish itself as a solution for the vaccine. And now, China and Russia are winning.
In Bosnia and Herzegovina, vaccination started in only one of its two entities. Traditionally close to Russia, Republic of Srpska secured a small number of doses of the Russian Sputnik V vaccine and plans to acquire more in the future. They also have a pre-contract to buy vaccines from China. The other Bosnian entity, Federation of Bosnia and Herzegovina, relied only on COVAX system and is still without a single dose.
In a pandemic, it is totally irresponsible to rely only on one promise that something will happen and not to have a second or third alternative.
But what some experts find worrying is the lack of information about the quality of the vaccines compared to those produced in the West. Many believe China is using vaccine distribution to gain influence and push the narrative that China's authoritarian system is more efficient than Western democracies.
This presents a situation where China can use it as an example of the fact that this relationship that Serbia has established with China has benefited Serbia. And this is, of course, exactly what President Vučić is saying, that look at what we've been able to get from our Chinese friends, while the European Union and the COVAX system has been entirely slow in developing, in delivering what, you know, all countries have desperately needed in terms of responding to this health crisis.
Shulman adds that looking forward, it will be important to follow China's actions in other fields as well, like technology and innovations. For Dino Jahic and Amer Jahic in Washington, Anna Rice, VOA News.
These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. Myanmar Suu Kyi makes first public appearance since February 1st coup. Nearly four dozen Hong Kong pro-democracy activists appear in court. Anger brews over Bangladesh writer's prison death. A survey says foreign journalists in China see rapid decline in media freedom. Timing of Australia film on Tai King criticized. You'll find much more on these stories, expanded with photos and videos, on Facebook at VOA Asia and our website, voanews.com. We continue with VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. New research has revealed that environmental damage caused by Australia's 5,600-kilometer-long dingo fence is so vast it can be seen from space. Satellite images have documented changes on both sides of one of the world's longest human-made structures, which stretches across three Australian states. From Sydney, Phil Mercer tells us more.
Dingoes are descended from South Asian wolves. They rarely bark, but tend to howl. They're thought to have arrived in Australia with Asian seafarers about 3,500 years ago. A study of the 5,600-kilometre dingo fence in the red sand dunes of the Strzelecki Desert in central Australia has revealed what happens when a key predator is removed. Adrian Fisher is a lecturer in remote sensing at the University of New South Wales.
Using 32 years of satellite images, we saw that the dynamics of the vegetation cover was different on either side of the fence. On the side where dingoes are rare, we found many more kangaroos, whose grazing lowered the grass cover across the landscape.
Fisher says that overgrazing damages soil quality, making the ground more vulnerable to erosion. He says dingoes not only keep kangaroo populations in check, they can also limit the ecological damage caused by feral pests.
It's clear that dingoes keep kangaroo numbers low, and where there are dingoes, there are fewer foxes and cats. This means that outside the fence, it's common to find small native mammals like the dusky hopping mouse. Together with the satellite images, this research clearly shows that the removal of the apex predator has had widespread effects on the landscape and its biodiversity. To restore and conserve these ecosystems, the important role of the dingo needs to be acknowledged.
The fence was built in Australia in the early 20th century to help protect sheep. Tearing parts of it down would threaten the livestock industry. But the authors of the university study hope that a balance can be found that restores ecosystems and protects farms. The University of New South Wales study was published in the journal Landscape Ecology. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Happening now in Asia, Aung San Suu Kyi appeared in court Monday, her first public appearance since she and other members of Myanmar's civilian government were removed from office February 1st during the military coup. Prosecutors charged her with two crimes during the court session, attempting to incite public unrest, violating a section of the telecommunications law, operating equipment without a license. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. It's nice to have you with us today on VOA Asia. Thanks for coming by. After passage in the U.S. House of Representatives with Democratic support only, President Joe Biden's $1.9 trillion COVID-19 relief package is heading to the Senate, where it will test his call for unity. Michelle Quinn reports.
COVID-19 infection rates are dropping in the United States, and the government has given emergency approval for a third vaccine. But the economic fallout continues. President Biden's $1.9 trillion COVID relief package aims to help the unemployed, along with troubled school districts and teetering industries. The bill passed the House with just Democratic support. It now heads to the 100-member Senate, which is evenly split between Democrats and Republicans, with Vice President Kamala Harris, a Democrat, able to break a tie. The bill, which includes a $1,400 check for most Americans, can't lose a single Democratic vote in the chamber. Not all Democrats are unified behind the bill, with some wanting to fight to increase the hourly minimum wage to $15, which is not in the Senate version.
I basically support raising the minimum wage in the COVID bill because that is a huge part of economic recovery. The people who are suffering most from the minimum wage and what's happening in the pandemic are the essential workers. Many of them are women. Many of them are getting paid very low wages.
Some Democratic senators are suggesting that instead of raising the minimum wage directly in the bill, they could do other things, like restrict tax breaks to corporations that don't increase wages. Republicans argue for a more narrowly focused economic stimulus package.
It's not targeted. We have a Republican alternative. As you know, we've been talking to the president's people about it, but gotten no response, which is much more targeted and focused on the real health care and economic matters that are urgent.
Democratic leaders want the bill to become law by March 14th, when jobless benefits expire. If it passes, the relief package will be the sixth round of aid from the federal government during the pandemic. Michelle Quinn, VOA News.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see with links to find them easily. With VOA Asia, you can also follow radio program host VOA Stevenson and VOA Melman. VOA Asia Twitter. We're always online for you.
This news from VOA Asia. Security forces in Lashio fired tear gas at protesters as demonstrators continued to rally in Myanmar in defiance of a crackdown by the military that killed at least 18 people a day earlier. Ambulances were also seen and heard, while military personnel were later seen leaving the incident. There's more on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, we look back on the Peace Corps. It was 60 years ago when President John F. Kennedy signed an executive order putting in place the Peace Corps, an international volunteer organization to promote peace and friendship. VOA correspondent Mariama Diallo has more on the challenging and rewarding experiences of so many who have taken part over the years.
The vision was born 6 decades ago. Former President John F. Kennedy outlined the program and prospects of young Americans going abroad to not only serve shoulder to shoulder with citizens of other countries, but also learn from them.
What is remarkable is that there is no salary for the members of the Peace Corps. They will go abroad and live on the same standard as people of other countries, but they will work with them 2 or 3 years, devoting part of their lives to peace and to strengthening the ties that bind men together all over the globe.
It was an audacious idea at the time, some said, but fast forward 60 years, the idea has been realized, says John F. Kennedy Presidential Library and Museum Director Alan Price.
It's been a fantastic idea, thanks to the hard work of volunteers and the hard work of host countries. I think that the goal has a long-term strategy to promote peace and friendship has been largely successful.
In the past 60 years, about 241,000 Peace Corps volunteers have served in more than 140 countries worldwide, says Peace Corps Acting Director Carol Spahn, who also noted a variety in the ages of participants.
Peace Corps volunteers range in age from 20 to 85. The bulk of them, tend to be in their 20s. But when I was serving as country director in Malawi, we had one of the oldest serving volunteers at that time. She was 82 years old and just a pistol. She was terrific.
Spahn was 26 when she decided to serve in the Peace Corps in Romania. It was 3 years after the fall of communism. Some people were suspicious, she says. But it was a life-changing experience for her.
What happens with many volunteers is you go into Peace Corps with a certain worldview or some expectations of why things are the way they are. And as you live and work with people that are different from yourselves, you start to ask questions. And when you go in with curiosity, you learn what's behind why things maybe happen differently than they do in your own country, or why people hold certain values, and what that history is.
Dwayne Matthews is also a returnee who spent time in Malawi from 2013 to 2015. He now works for the Department of Housing and Urban Development and is pursuing a PhD program at Washington's Howard University. He's from Little Rock, Arkansas, and had never traveled abroad before.
When I got to Malawi, it was a complete culture shock. That first week or so was terrifying, but then by the time I was leaving Peace Corps, I actually broke down in tears because I had to leave. So it was the best choice I made in my young adult life up to that point.
The youth in Malawi don't have a voice.
While there, he served as a community health advisor who worked on many projects. One of his proudest is securing a nearly $7,000 grant to help build a youth center, a project the community also contributed to, he said.
community, they actually donated like 30% of the of what we needed. So the community donated the land, they donated some of the labor, they donated some of the bricks and quarry stone. We actually had money remaining because of the community contribution, which is how we knew this project was going to be sustainable, because the community wanted it.
Christopher Destich served in Guatemala from 2018 to 2020. He's now a regional recruiter for the Peace Corps.
I lived in a small Mayan community. There's about 2,000 people in the community that I was in. And I lived with a three-generation indigenous Mayan family, which was really awesome. Very chaotic, but very loving.
While there, he says, he partnered with the Guatemalan Ministry of Agriculture to implement their rural extension program.
So basically, I was working with them to give trainings to increase the capacity of rural Mayan farmers. The objective was to increase their capacity to grow food and thereby decrease things like food insecurity, malnutrition, and hunger.
Both Matthews and Destich say they've learned life lessons and skills they wouldn't have had they not served in the Peace Corps. Mariama Diallo, VOA News, Washington.
Making headlines in Asia, hundreds of protesters gathered outside a Hong Kong court for the hearing of 47 democracy activists charged with conspiracy to commit subversion. Security was tight, with more than 100 police officers deployed. Stay up to date with VOA and VOA 60. This is VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, U.S. lawmakers launched an investigation last week into the December 2020 SolarWinds hack that included a breach of many private and U.S. government computer systems. As VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson tells us, tech heads are telling lawmakers the full scope of the breach is still not known.
The December 2020 cybersecurity breach known as the SolarWinds hack is giving U.S. lawmakers new cause for concern this week, as the full scope of the damage is still being revealed.
The footholds these hackers gained into private networks, including some of the world's largest IT vendors, may provide opportunities for future intrusions for years to come.
Experts say the hack is consistent with a Russian espionage operation, although the country has denied involvement.
There's a high likelihood that between the federal government's likely designation and Microsoft's clear implication that it's the Russian SVR. And you wouldn't expect very, very infrequently do countries admit to espionage publicly.
While the hack involves thousands of U.S. companies, the hackers appear to be focused on 100 private sector firms and the 9 U.S. government agencies involved in the breach.
Who knows the entirety of what happened here? One entity knows. It was the attacker. The attacker knows everything they did. And right now, the attacker is the only one that knows everything they did.
CEOs are telling lawmakers a large part of the hackers' success was due to their methods.
Imagine almost a secret door into your house, and the first thing that happens when they come through that secret door is all your keys are right there. They just grab them, and now they can get into any locks you have in your house.
The hack was only revealed publicly after affected companies, including Microsoft and software network SolarWinds, disclosed the breach.
What we are learning and still learning is the breadth and depth of the sophistication of the attackers, number one. Number two is the patience with which they carried out these attacks, and obviously the persistence.
Some lawmakers are urging caution while the details of the hack are still being revealed.
While there are a myriad of ways for sovereign states to respond, I caution against the use of certain terms at this time until the facts lead us to the use of terms such as attack and so forth.
But the White House said Tuesday sanctions against Russia could come down in a matter of weeks.
We want to focus on giving our team the time they need to take additional steps to fine-tune the attribution, and we reserve the right to respond at a time and a manner of our choosing.
Experts say that is just one piece of the U.S.'s own cybersecurity response.
Making it harder for them to do this in the future. trying to suss out what tools they're developing so that we can look for future operations and potentially getting, you know, signals information that we can provide to the private sector to warn them of what to look for next time.
A House panel is set to further investigate the hack in a hearing Friday. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Washington.
Hair loss is one of the unfortunate side effects of some cancer treatments, but one survivor has decided that losing her hair did not mean she could not look and feel great. Maxine Miskalkov has her story.
This one was dyed with indigo as well, but a very light indigo, and then over dyed with onion skins. And these are yellow onion skins that make this really gorgeous yellow print.
Amy Hindman, a Virginia-based designer, makes scarves only from organic materials and natural dyes, like nuts, roots, leaves, and onion skins. Mm-hmm. She also grows a wide variety of plants and flowers on her little farm close to Washington, D.C.
There are flowers that are known to have dye properties and have been used for natural dyes for centuries, really. And some of the ones that I grow are marigolds. They grow wonderfully in this zone of the United States. And they are very hardy, and they make a really beautiful yellow and orange and even black sometimes.
Hindman says it takes from 1 to 2 weeks to manufacture one scarf. Each of her creations is intricately decorated and has a soothing motif. That's Hindman's tribute to her own very difficult path. In 2009, just after giving birth, she was diagnosed with stage 3 breast cancer. Hindman immediately started treatment at Johns Hopkins University.
And what was interesting is their treatment plan was completely different than the treatment plan that I had originally gotten from that doctor that I saw first. So, you know, it's something that has been really eye-opening.
Chemotherapy and beam therapy, double mastectomy, breast reconstruction surgery, and since Hindman was a high-risk group, ovariectomy. During the long treatment, her hair started falling out, but her love for scarves got stronger and took on a whole new purpose.
I started trying on different scarves and wearing wigs and realizing how absolutely terrible a lot of the options on the market were, and also how hot and uncomfortable wigs are.
The American Society of Clinical Oncology gave Hindman 2 grants to launch her new line of headscarves. 5% of every sale benefit Facing Our Risk of Cancer Empowered, or FORCE, an organization that provides resources for hereditary breast and ovarian cancers. Hindman admits that it was thoughts about her children and about other women suffering from cancer that helped her fight off the disease.
I owe it to my daughters, and I want them to see how you can come back from something really hard and that you can get through it.
Hindman has many loyal clients all over the United States.
It's crazy to say this, but I almost think having cancer has made her better. So she's a warrior.
Hindman plans to open a little studio where women can learn to work with organic materials. Later this year, Hindman hopes to move beyond scarves to create a collection of dresses. Maxim Moskalkov for VOA News, Manassas, Virginia.
Thanks for joining us today on VOA Asia. Come back again tomorrow. You can also follow us online for all the latest Myanmar news on Twitter at VOA Asia, Instagram, YouTube, and of course, Facebook. We thank our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, Keith Lane, and Amy Hybels. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a terrific day ahead. Be safe. Be well.